During the offering, any loose coins or bills and any checks with Hebron House on the memo line will go to Hebron House. On January 29th, from noon till 2 p.m., there will be a forum here at LCUUC. The subject is Black Lives Matter, what it is, what it is not, and why we care. Now more than ever, this movement is important. The forum will be led by Ann Heidkamp, Justice Builder for UU Church West. This workshop will enhance our understanding of the Black Lives Matter movement. In addition to the main questions above, we will explore a number of issues, including, in what ways do we commit subtle actions of racism? How do we use language and actions that can be unintentionally offensive to people of color? What does it mean to be anti-racist versus just non-racist? Where are we now as a country in terms of racism, and what can we do now? Social Justice will provide a soup lunch before the forum. Please sign up in the social hall or by calling or emailing Brittany. The Green Sanctuary has a new Northwest Earth Institute discussion class starting today at 11:45. Sessions are open even to those who have not registered, so please join and add your voice. $5 free will donation is suggested if you would like to help defray the cost of the materials. Discussions cover issues such as climate science, what you need to know, why people don't believe in climate science, global warming solutions, and how will everything change under climate change. See Ray Grosch or other members of the Green Sanctuary if you have any questions. Also, related to that, the locations for today's UU orientation and Change is Our Choice, Creating Climate Solutions have been swapped. So if you're going to the climate solutions and you find yourself talking about UU orientation, you're in the wrong place, and vice versa. The orientation will be in room 5. Climate solutions class will be in room 1. And you're invited to join both either as you see fit. Junpo Roshi, founder and abbot of the worldwide Hollow Bones Order of Rinzai Zen, will be giving a Dharma talk during the Kintsugi Sangha meeting Thursday evening, January 26th. Junpo is Dharma heir to Aido Shimano Roshi and former vice abbot of Dibosatsu Monastery, where he studied and taught for many years. He has written a number of books, the most recent being A Heart Blown Open and the Heart of Zen. So this is a rare opportunity to meet an acknowledged Zen master. Come and join in the adventure. Doors are open at 6, so that's Thursday evening, January 26th, starting as early as 6 o'clock to come early, and the talk and other events start at 6:30 itself. And lastly, today's order of service includes announcements of other upcoming church activities, and we look forward to everyone joining in. To stay current on services, events, and activities, check our webpage at lcuuc.org, and like and follow us on Facebook. Please take a moment at this point to silence all electronics that you may have here with you today as we begin our service. Thanks.
We dedicate this time together to renewing our hope. May the stories we share give us courage. May the songs we sing give us that hope. May the words we speak give us wisdom. And most of all, may the touch of hands and the sight of faces, the sound of voices lifted in song and affirmation, restore in us faith that this world may be made whole and all its people one. Come and let us worship here together. Please take just a moment to say hello or to introduce yourself to your neighbor. Hello.
O sacred flame, blaze forth, wisdom brought to life. Guide us with the light of hope, the warmth of love, the beacon of purpose and meaning. Because we are afraid of the dark, let there be light. Please rise in body and spirit, or spirit, and join in singing our opening hymn, number 169, We Shall Overcome.
Thank you.
Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. At LCUUC, we work to bring a message of hope and grace to an imperfect world. My name is Paul Fackler, and I'm the worship associate for this morning's service. No matter who you are or where you have come from, you are welcome here. Whether you have slept soundly all your life, dreamt only of Jeannie with the light brown hair, or dream, like Martin Luther King, that one day all children will live in a nation where they are judged by the content of their character and not by the color of their skin, you are welcome here. Please join us for refreshments and conversation in our social hall after the service, and while you're there, find out more about our church. We are glad that you have chosen to be here today to celebrate and worship with us.
One of the ways that we here at LCUUC care for our wider community is by contributing to the food pantries in the neighborhoods around us. And we do that both financially and by collecting non-perishables, which we donate each month. So if you've brought food items to share, you can bring them forward now and put them in the basket, or ask a child to bring them forward for you. And I invite the children to stay up front and enjoy a story with our worship associate, Paul Fackler.
Good morning, all you guys. Okay, does anybody know whose birthday it is today? Today is the 15th of January. Who has their birthday today? Anybody? Anybody know? Go ahead. I wish. What? Martin Luther King Jr. That's right. He was born today. So, we're going to talk a little bit about Martin Luther King Jr. And I went to the library because, you know, I had to look around for a story. So I went to the library and I found that there are literally hundreds of books about him. And I thought, you know, instead of reading one of these books, because there's a lot of them, I'm going to tell you guys to all go to the library and find some that you like to read and learn more about him. But I also thought, you know, if somebody's written this many books about a person, he is a cultural phenomenon. So I thought, let's do an experiment and see how much you guys can tell me about Martin Luther King Jr. So, you know, if I asked you about Batman, for instance, I bet you guys as a group would have group knowledge about Batman. You could tell me things about him. As a group. Yeah, good. See? So we're going to do the same thing with Martin Luther King Jr., who is a real person. And we're going to ask some very simple things about him. So we're going to play this as a game. We'll make it like a game show quiz so you guys can raise your hands if you know answers or part of the answers. And as a bonus, I'm just going to be giving away points, which you can have as points. So here's the basic question. So think about this. We want to know, who is Martin Luther King Jr.? Why is he important? And what did he do? So, okay, let's start out. First of all, so hold your thoughts and raise your hands when you have something. I'm going to start out simple. Where was he born and when? So does anybody know where he was born and when?
Right now.
Right now? No. But go on. Let's do this. Is he Canadian? No. Is he? He's African American, correct? And that would mean he was born in the United States. Yes, go ahead. He was born on January 15th, so you know a year. Is he older than George Washington?
No.
Is he older than Abraham Lincoln? No. Okay, so he's after Abraham Lincoln. Is he older than your parents, do you think?
Yes.
Pretty much. Okay. Okay, so you guys know generally he's after Abraham Lincoln. Okay, I'll give you 100 points for that. So anybody know what state he was born in? Was he born in the North or the South?
South.
See? So you know certain things. So he was born in Atlanta, Georgia, on January 15th, 1929. There you go. He would be 88 years old today. All right, next question. What kind of job did he have? So, was he a doctor, tinker, tailor, soldier, spy, journalist, carpenter? What? Well, a wizard. You know, I'll grant that. 100 points for that. A what? A governor. No, he was not a governor. He did not have an elected position, interestingly enough. A doctor. He was known as Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Was he a medical doctor? No, he was not a medical doctor, but he was a doctor because he had a PhD. So that's 100 points for that answer. He was a president. No, he was not a president. Go ahead. He was a civil rights activist, but what did he do? I'm going to give you a hint. We have a person that's sitting up there that does the same sort of thing as him. Go ahead. He was a reverend. He was a minister. That's right. So he was a minister. He was a Baptist minister, and he was ordained at the age of 19 in 1948. He had a PhD in theology, and that's why you hear him referred to as Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Okay, that one's going to fall over. No, there we go. All right. Was he married, and did he have any kids? Yes, that is correct. 1,000 points for that. Does anybody know his wife's name or any of his children's names? Yes, he did. He had a number of kids. Yeah. And guess what? Some of them are still around today. Yes, go ahead. What? He had 3 kids? He had 1 more than that. I thought 3 originally, too. He had 4 kids. Yes. I'll give you a hint. One of his kids is named after him. So his father was Martin Luther King Sr. He was Martin Luther King Jr. So what would one of his kids' names? The third. That's right. So you've probably heard this name. If you go to the library, he was married to Coretta Scott. So there are various literary awards for writing books. Coretta Scott King Award. And he was married in 1953. He had 4 children. Yolanda, Martin III, Dexter, who was named after the church that his father was at, and Bernice. Okay. What was his race? Somebody already said this. Go ahead. He was African American. Why does this matter, do you think? Ooh, we got a lot of hands. Go ahead. Very good. Yep. There was segregation at the time of society that he grew up. Anybody else? Go ahead. So he was one of the few African Americans. He was not one of the few. He was one of the leaders of the many African Americans who stood up. And you've mentioned the key word, in my opinion, which is he fought against segregation and what were called at the time that he was growing up the Jim Crow laws. So if you grew up in the South, in various places in the South, and you were really thirsty and out in public and you went to a drinking fountain, what kind of sign might there be on that drinking fountain? Go ahead. Right. So there, do you have another? There were signs that said whites only, and then there was another one that said this is for blacks. So that's one of the most important things. So 1,000 points for knowing the keyword segregation. You can learn about Jim Crow laws. There's people who've also written books called The New Jim Crow Laws, which is about how Jim Crow has changed since some of the changes. He also stood for voting rights, job and housing, to end job and housing discrimination. Those were some of the things he worked against. Now, how did he go about trying to make changes? Go ahead. Speeches. Okay. Go ahead. Peaceful protests. Yes. So he was the leader of what was called the nonviolence movement. And I think that is the biggest cultural thing that we all should know. Nonviolence, civil disobedience, satyagraha, truth force. So where did he get that from? Does anybody know who he studied? Go ahead. Anybody? No? Guy from India. Mahatma Gandhi, who had used those to help India break free of Britain. Okay. So now, can any of you name any famous events that Martin Luther King helped with, worked at? Go ahead. A march? To where, from where? Not sure, but you know he marched. Okay? 100 points for that. You were going to say the same thing? So we know he marched. Anything else? Civil rights movement? Yes. 100 points for that? his I Am a Dream speech. How many of you have heard his I Am a Dream speech? Do you know where he gave that speech? In Washington, D.C. 1,000 points for that. Very good. And who was he standing in front of at the time that he gave that speech? Well, yeah, but let me put it this way. Who was behind him? What statue was behind him when he gave that speech? So, go ahead. Abraham Lincoln, that's right. So at the Abraham Lincoln Memorial, big statue of Abraham Lincoln standing behind him when he gave that speech. Now, there's another one you guys know had to do with buses. So, and there was a woman who wouldn't give up her seat. Do you remember who that was? Rosa Parks, yes, Rosa Parks, 1955 Montgomery boycott, 1957 prayer pilgrimage for freedom into Washington, D.C., and then on from there to 1963 where he gave the I Have a Dream speech. So you guys know a lot of things about him, and I'm impressed with all of those pieces. I want you to go to the library and get some of these hundreds of books out and learn even more about him, because I think he's a fabulous, wonderful person. So thanks for all playing this show today. I'm going to give you an extra 1,000 points, and you are all free to go on to your classes now. 200,000 total.
All right. Now my lantern bearer. All right, you got it? May the light and love of our chalice lead you all today and every day, and if everyone would help us sing the children to their classroom. The song is called For You Shall Go Out. Words are in your order of service. A UU minister answered her phone and heard, "Hello, is this the Reverend?" "It is." "This is the Internal Revenue Service. Can you answer a few questions for us?" "Well, certainly." "Do you know a John Smith?" "I do." "Is he a member of your congregation?" "He is." "Did he donate $100,000 to the church this year?" There was a long pause, and the minister said, he did." The IRS agent said suspiciously, "Can you tell me when he gave that money to the church, Reverend?" "Oh, in about 15 minutes, as soon as I get off this phone," the minister said. This morning's offering will now be given and received, and please remember the designated collection is for Hebron House, so loose coins and bills, any check where you write Hebron House on the memo line will go to Hebron House. Thank you for these gifts and for everything that you do for the life and the work of this community. One of the reasons we come together on Sundays is to share our laughter and our tears. Before the service, you're always welcome to come up here to the candle table and to silently light a candle. But during the service, we speak aloud and the worship associate lights our candles for us. So would anyone who has a joy or a concern to share, please raise your hand. One of the ushers will bring you a microphone.
This is Gus. Last Sunday after the service, I got a flat tire on the ramp going onto Highway 16. And Jerry Flakus stopped to see if I, you know, needed some help. And also John and Catherine Marari, I believe is the last name, if I'm pronouncing that correct, Lee. And but I told them, no, I've got AAA and, you know, just go on. Well, I couldn't, I had a hard time getting the tire out of the back of the car. And John had a hard time with, no, never mind, I'm not going to tell you that part because I don't want to dog him out. But anyway, this guy named Eddie, who's about 70-something years old, stopped and said, I understand that you can't get the tire off, whatever. And he put the jack under the car, helped me get the tire out, and replaced the tire, the spare for the flat tire. He also happened to have a bicycle pump in his car, which he and John used to get the spare up to where it's supposed to be. To make a long story short, I was very impressed with this guy because he said, no, you don't need to thank me or whatever, but he looked me straight in the eye and said, I want you to pay this forward. And I said, yes, sir. He was very kind to do that, and he seemed actually to enjoy helping me. So that is definitely a joy.
My name is Mark. I have a concern for my friend Jono, my best friend Jono, who's in ICU and probably won't get out. I've known him for 30 years, and yet I didn't know he was an alcoholic until probably this last year. At this point, I just hope he's not in pain.
This is Dennis. Linda and I just celebrated our 32nd anniversary, so we're very happy about that. I'm very lucky.
This is Linda, and this actually is Dennis's birthday. So there you go.
This is Claire. Just a candle of concern for all of those affected by the repeal of the Affordable Care Act as well as Obamacare. I feel for them and for those that may not ever get health insurance now. It's a big concern for our country.
This is Jerry. Not to upstage Dennis and Linda. The next weekend, Esther and I will have been married 50 years.
Anyone else? Can we light the last candle today for all of those joys and all of those sorrows which we hold deeply in our hearts, but which we have not been able to name aloud here today? I'd like to ask Claudette to join me up here. Claudette, where are you? And Claudette's going to do a little bit of sharing with us this morning. Yeah, it's that one.
entire community from the time I was...
Hold on, Claudette. Can...
I'll start over. I have many stories of overt racism in my own family, friends, and an entire community from the time I was little. I will tell you a story that sticks in my mind. I grew up on a farm in southeast Missouri, where in the 50s and 60s, cotton was a major crop, more important than corn or soybeans. Our farm had families who lived there to help my dad with the farming activities. One night, I rode with my parents to a house on the farm across the road from the Mississippi levee, where an older African-American couple, Sam and Effie May, lived. I did not know their last names. It was after dark, and although fairly early, there were no lights on in the house. Daddy drove up close to the door with the car lights shining on the house and reflecting off the windows. I think he honked the horn, got out of the car, and walked toward the front door. In a moment, the door opened, and I could see through the screen the two people inside. Sam had on his overalls, and Ellie Mae was wearing a cotton house dress. I heard Sam ask my dad in a quavery voice filled with fear, "Who's there?" "It's Claude Green, and I've come to tell you that I need you tomorrow to help with..." I don't remember what Daddy needed help with. I only remember the fear I heard in Sam's voice and the little gasp of fear-filled breaths I heard from Effie Mae. When Daddy got in the car, I asked about what I had heard, and he said, "Negroes are afraid of the dark." I later learned that black people were afraid of what came out of the dark. Darkness is a metaphor for ignorance, hate, hopelessness, indifference, fear, and death. We have come so far in so many respects since that night on the farm, but we still have a long road ahead. The challenges are both obvious and subtle. Our own unintended insensitivity and lack of knowledge about the life experiences of black people are included in the challenges. Most of us have chosen, for one reason or another, to live in communities where there is little diversity. That makes it even more difficult for us to understand. I am grateful for the education I have received so far about Black Lives Matter and what that actually means and doesn't mean. I am grateful for conversations I have had with my daughter, who works with young homeless people in Milwaukee, most of whom are black, and the perspectives different than my own that she has provided. I am grateful for our social justice committee and the work in which we are engaged. I recently visited Southeast Missouri, and I was able to have a difficult conversation with members of my family who still live there, a place in permanent recession, much more diverse in its population, with much more poverty, and where racism still exists in all its forms. We talked about the difference between Black Lives Matter and All Lives Matter. Our conversation was very back and forth, heated at times, but I heard their perspective and they heard mine. We talked about systemic issues in education, transportation, healthcare, and criminal justice. I won't go into the details, but will just say that I felt more confident in having the conversation with only one of me and several members of my family, because I had given the time to learn and reflect. My nephew said at the end that I had given him something to think about and a perspective that he had not considered before. That was my tiny light that I could shine into an opening that occurred that day. I know that you are like me in that you read and view the news, read books and articles and lots of stuff online. For me, that occurs in isolation. We will have the opportunity on January the 29th to learn and reflect together. If becoming more knowledgeable about Black Lives Matter and how we unknowingly commit subtle acts of racism, often through insensitive words we use, we can shine a light through any opening in ourselves and others. Please join me and other members of our congregation on January 29th from noon until 2 p.m. to learn, discuss, and reflect together. I will continue to work on what I need to change in me, and I hope you will too.
Thank you. Please join me in a silent moment of meditation or the spirit of prayer.
One thing that we usually remember about the story of Rip Van Winkle is that he slept 20 years. But there is another point in that story which is almost always completely overlooked. It is the sign on the inn of the little town on the Hudson from which Rip Van Winkle went up into the mountains for his long sleep. When he went up, the sign had a picture of King George III of England. When he came down, the sign had a picture of George Washington, the first president of the United States. When Rip Van Winkle looked up at the picture of George Washington, he was amazed. He was completely lost. He knew not who he was. This incident reveals to us that the most striking thing about the story of Rip Van Winkle is not merely that he slept 20 years, but that he slept through a revolution. One of the great misfortunes of history is that all too many individuals and institutions find themselves in a great period of change and yet fail to achieve the new attitudes and outlooks that the new situation demands. There is nothing more tragic than to sleep through a revolution. And there can be no gainsaying of the fact that a social revolution is taking place in our world today. We see it in other nations in the demise of colonialism. We see it in our own nation, in the struggle against racial segregation and discrimination. And as we notice this struggle, we are aware of the fact that a social revolution is taking place in our midst. Victor Hugo once said that there is nothing more powerful in all the world than an idea whose time has come. The idea whose time has come today is the idea of freedom and human dignity. And so, all over the world, we see something of a freedom explosion. And this reveals to us that we are in the midst of revolutionary times. An older order is passing away, and a new order is coming into being.
Dear Dr. King, when you spoke at the UUA's General Assembly in Hollywood, Florida in 1966, when you spoke those words, you could never, ever have imagined what it looks like 51 years later here in your America. We are poised on the brink of another revolution. Another period of social change where our nation stands struggling. Black people are still dying in the streets, Dr. King. And we don't know what to do about that because this time the revolution is televised. It's on the internet and it's on the radio and it's on the World Wide Web. And we see it happening in front of our faces. And we still don't know what to do. Black people are dying, killed by police officers. They're killed by other black people, angry and dismayed over their lot in life. They're killed by vigilantes, frightened of black skin.
Black women are arrested for failing to signal and they die in jail. Black boys die playing with toy guns. But Dr. King, the time has indeed come and we are not asleep. Dear Dr. King, you spoke from the depths of a Christianity which called you not to liberalism, but to liberation. And those words still call to us today. As Unitarian Universalists, we are called by a voice which will not let us discard your dream. A voice which speaks as loudly and as surely as a burning bush. We are called to liberation. There was a march in Washington just last week led by activists of all colors, gay people and straight people together, all wreathed in anger and pain at the incoming administration's remarks about Muslims and minority groups, women and Mexicans. And 2,000 people gathered in the National Mall and stood at your memorial, Dr. King. They stood at the King Memorial, only 2 miles from where an inauguration will happen in under a week. And Cornell William Brooks, the president and the chief executive of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, he spoke to those marchers. And he said at last, "We will march until hell freezes over. And when it does, we will march on ice. As long as one person remains a slave to a system built on racism and colonialism and oppression, Republican and Democrat, all alike, we are called to march for our beliefs, not our political party. And we will march until hell freezes over, and then we will march on ice. We will march for liberation. We will march for equality. We will work for justice. And we will march for saving grace for every human being." Would you please rise in body or spirit and join me in singing one of Dr. King's favorite hymns, number 205, Amazing Grace.
our scientific genius, we have made of this world a neighborhood. And now, through our moral and ethical commitment, we must make it a brotherhood. We must live together as brothers, or we will all perish together as fools. This is a fact of life. No individual can live alone. No nation can live alone. All I'm saying is this, that all life is interrelated, and somehow we are all tied together. For some strange reason, I can never be what I ought to be until you are what you ought to be, and you can never be what you ought to be until I am what I ought to be. This is the interrelated structure of all reality. John Donne caught it years ago and placed it in graphic terms. No man is an island entire of itself. Every man is a piece of the continent, a part of the main. He goes on to say, any man's death diminishes me because I am involved in all mankind. Therefore, send not to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee. This realization is absolutely necessary if we are to remain awake in this revolution.
Dear Dr. King, we're trying. We've been trying for 51 years to learn the simple art of loving our neighbor as ourselves and respecting the worth of all human persons. And we still don't have it right all the time, but we are trying. It's hard for us to see that when 50 people are packed together at one end of a tiny boat, they will fight and kill one another for breathing room. And even though we are the ones who force them there and we are the ones who keep them there, it's hard for us to see that we can set them free. We struggle to realize that if their end of the boat sinks, our end will too, because it's all one boat. But we keep trying. We will not go back to sleep. We keep trying because slavery for one is slavery for all, and we know that we are not islands. And we are called by the demands of our faith to work for freedom. Please rise in body or spirit and join me in singing number 156, O Freedom.
Today's arguments are generally placed on subtle cultural grounds. For instance, the Negro is not culturally ready for integration. If you integrate the schools and other areas of life, this will put the race back a generation. And another, the Negro is a criminal. You see, he has the highest crime rate in any city. So the arguments go ad infinitum. Those who use these arguments never say that if there are lagging standards in the Negro community, and there certainly are, they lag because of segregation and discrimination. They never go on to say that criminal responses are environmental and not racial. Poverty, ignorance, economic deprivation, social isolation breed crime in any racial group. It is a torturous logic to use the tragic results of segregation as an argument for the continuation of it. It is necessary to go to the causal root to deal with the problem. So it is necessary for the church, through all of its channels of education and through all of its work, to guide the popular mind and rid the community of the notion of superior and inferior races. We've all seen enough to refute the idea. We've seen Negroes who have been inspiring examples of ability to rise above the shackles of difficult environment. Skin may differ, but affection dwells in black and white the same. If I were so tall as to reach the pole or to grasp the ocean at a span, I must still be measured by my soul, the mind is the standard of the man.
Dear Dr. King, the dream is alive and well today in the hands of Unitarian Universalists across the country. It is alive in the hands of Black Lives Matter activists and in peaceful high school students who refuse to learn to hate. It is alive in some politicians and in some college students and in young people growing up in the inner cities. The dream remains. The dream Dr. King saw is alive in each of us who answers the call of our faith and stands up for liberation. It is alive in each person who refuses to go back to sleep. It is alive in each one of us who says it isn't business as usual anymore. We have to learn a better way. We are entering a time when the call to bravery and resilience, to resistance and solidarity is everywhere. We must stand behind our brothers and sisters in love and in trust. And we must trust that together, only together, can we find our way home. Because that dream is only there if we keep dreaming. If we keep walking together. If we keep marching. And I will say to you now, as long as one person remains a slave in a system built on racism, colonialism, and oppression, you, yes, you, every one of you, are called to march. And in the words of Brooks, we will march until hell freezes over, and then we will march on ice. Amen.
We carry the flame into the world, and we keep the dream alive. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our closing hymn this week, number 1018 in the Teal Hymnal, Come and Go With Me.
Thank you.
we shall overcome when we can truly celebrate the diversity of contributions and talents offered by all people. We shall overcome hatred and prejudice and oppression. Living in peace and freedom, we shall overcome the wrongs that have happened and the debts left unpaid. Let us join together in that commitment to overcome always. Peace, and may it be so.